chill on the road. The time is 8:32 a.m. on November 3rd, and I call the meeting of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. This meeting is video hosted using Zoom. The public and parties on this agenda have been properly noticed of this fact and have been supplied the meeting access instructions. Ms. Poe, would you please begin with a roll call?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davey?
Present.
Mr. Dinar? Dr. Catarino? Dr. Medina?
Present.
Dr. Malott?
Present.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Here.
Dr. Stewart?
Present.
Mr. Nguyen?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Poe. Please note that any time stated on the agenda are approximate. The board makes every effort to begin proceedings at the scheduled time. The board may suspend the discussion of one agenda item, proceed to a timed item, and then return to a former agenda item at a later time. The board may also reorder non-timed items at its discretion. Board members, thank you very much for using the raise your hand feature on Zoom. It's very helpful for me to be able to facilitate and recognize each of you as you decide to speak. Additionally, the board encourages everyone in attendance today to provide feedback by completing the board assessment form. You will find a link on the meeting agenda that is posted on the board's website. I want to take a moment just to recognize board members for all the hard work, particularly today, those that were able to attend. I know we are tight on quorum, so I appreciate the effort, one, to be here, and then the effort to also be prepared. For the public, each of these board members spends many hours preparing for this meeting behind the scenes so that we can get here and do the business of our board. We appreciate each of the board members' time and effort. In addition, I'd like to acknowledge the effort of the board staff and, of course, our attorney, Ms. Galvin. Again, behind the scenes, if it wasn't for all the work that they did to be able to prep us and prepare us with all the information required, all the materials required, there is no way we could do the business of the board. And so, again, just thank them for their efforts and always their diligence in preparing for these meetings. Attendance of this board meeting is eligible for continuing education credit if it is at least 4 hours long. We expect today to be very close to that, but there is no guarantee. Should its duration be 4 or more hours, make note of the code words provided throughout the meeting to report the code words to the board staff for the purpose of earning continuing education credit. Look for the link on the board's meeting page for this particular meeting. It is likely that today's meetings will not be 4 hours in duration, as I kind of mentioned. So thank you for your understanding. I would like to just take a moment to recognize a few things that are going on in the Committee for Behavior Analysts. The board office was recently notified that Dr. Kristen Byra has been named as the successor appointee to Dr. Davis Wilson to begin serving on the Committee on Behavior Analysts. Dr. Davis Wilson's term on the committee ended in January of this year, and she graciously continued serving until her replacement was appointed. Many of you know Dr. Davis Wilson, as she was also on this on the full board of the psychologist examiners. So we wish Dr. Davis Wilson all the well. I know that she is here today as a public member. Thank you for her time and for her efforts to get not only the Committee on Behavior Analysts headed in the right direction, but also for a key contributions to this board over her years of service. Would also like to just welcome Dr. Byra to the team, and that her she will actually participate in her first committee meeting on December 1st. Let's now move to a call for the public. Those wishing to address the board do not need to request permission in advance. However, the board will limit the number of persons making or speaking during this time to a reasonable number on any public comment matter. In addition, each person wishing to address the board will be given 3 minutes to do so. Pursuant to ARS 38431.02H, the board can only take action on matters listed on the agenda. The board members may not discuss the matter with each other or with the member of the public addressing the board. The only option available is to instruct staff to place the topic on a future agenda meeting or a future agenda if applicable. If you wish to speak, please unmute your line, state your name, and I'll be happy to call on you. I'm scanning my Zoom boards here to see if anybody has unmuted themselves, and it does not appear so. All right. Not hearing of anyone from the public wishing to address us, I will move on. Council update. Item number four, five. The board council update.
Mr. President, I have nothing at this time. Thank you.
No, well, thank you very much. Thank you for the elevation as well to my new title. Then I go ahead and note that the Attorney General has provided me a new title of president. All right. With that, let's keep this party going forward. Let's go ahead and move to agenda item number six, and that is the consent agenda. For the record, are there any recusals on the consent agenda? I think we pulled the ones that we knew we were going to have trouble with or with quorum. That looks good. All right. Hearing no recusals. Can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Second. Can I get a second? Thank you, second. Dr. Medina. Very good. All in favor, please. Actually, any further discussion? No. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions or recusals? Hearing none, motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. And that will move us to number seven. Okay, number seven, discussion, consideration of possible action regarding motion to quash the board subpoena and to stay the investigation for Martha Thomas Horvath, PhD, for complaint number 2353. Ms. Michelson, would you like to give us an update on that? I will also note that the board may vote to go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records, including the receipt and discussion of information or testimony that is confidential by state or federal law and or ARS 38431.03A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney. Ms. Michelson, I'll now turn it over to you.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. I will just provide the board with a brief summary of this matter. In May of this year, the board received a complaint against Dr. Horvath relating to his professional testimony for a family court matter in Montana. Dr. Horvath was retained by one of the parties who's involved in a custody proceeding to provide expert testimony. The complainant also filed a complaint regarding the same allegations with the Montana board and the other jurisdiction, California, where Dr. Horvath also holds a psychologist license. In July, the board received the licensee's response to the complaint via his attorney. However, it was noted that the file for his testimony was not supplied with this response. So board staff made a request for this documentation. Subsequently, his attorney submitted a letter declining to provide the file in response to staff's request. Board staff then sent a subpoena to Dr. Horvath for his file. The subpoena specified that the records were due by August 31st. However, it was noted that the licensee did not comply with that subpoena. Instead of complying, on August 29th, Dr. Horvath's attorney filed a motion to quash and to stay the investigation. That motion contained two requests. First, that it was requested the board quash the subpoena because it was their position that the board does not have jurisdiction over his file nor his conduct in Montana. The second request was that the board stay its investigation into this complaint as it was their position that Montana has jurisdictional priority over Arizona. I do want to note that the status of Montana's investigation to this complaint is not clear to board staff at this time, as we have not received any correspondence from Dr. Horvath's attorney regarding any updates on that case, nor for the complaint filed in California. So just in conclusion, this motion is before the board today to make a decision on. Of course, I encourage the board to receive legal advice from Ms. Galvin. So please let me know if there are any questions.
Questions from?
I have a question, Dr. Davies.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Yeah. You're My welcome. Question is, can you explain his license status for the board? Dr. Horvath.
I believe his license status is currently active. Let me double check the expiration date. Yes, his license is active until February 29th of 2024.
So the complainant filed a complaint with, who lives in Montana, filed a complaint in Montana.
It's my understanding the complainant filed a complaint in Montana where this custody proceeding is taking place. And she also filed a complaint with the California board as he's also licensed in California. So he's only licensed, my understanding, is California and Arizona.
Oh, okay. So they also added it to Arizona.
Heidi, can we confirm whether Dr. Horvath or his attorney are present?
Ms. Galvin, I do see that the attorney, Ms. Patain, I believe is her name, is present. I saw her tile. I have not been able to recognize Dr. Horvath's presence.
Yeah, if there are no further questions for Ms. Michelson, we can go ahead and move to brief statement to the board by I believe it's Ms. Pantane, who I see there now next in my box there. And if Dr. Horvath is available, we can go ahead and accept statements from both of them at this time. So no further questions, Ms. Michelson. Hearing none, Ms. Bantain, would you like to take over and provide a statement?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Davey and members of the board. My name is Cynthia Patain, and I represent Dr. Horvath. He is not present today. As you've heard, a motion to stay and a motion to quash have been filed on behalf of Dr. Horvath. And I'd like to provide you with some more context to the circumstances surrounding the board complaint and those motions. The board complaint arises out of Dr. Horvath's testimony in a family law case in Montana, which you heard in the summary. In that case, the parents of minor children are disputing custodial issues, and that case is ongoing. Dr. Horvath is the expert for the mother. The expert for the father filed the board complaint against Dr. Horvath in Montana, California, and Arizona over his testimony at a hearing in that family law case in Montana. So the complainant here in Arizona is the expert for the dad. Dr. Horvath is the expert for the mom. The board investigations are open in Montana and California. And as recently as yesterday, there have been no new developments in those investigations. Dr. Horvath did produce his file to the Arizona board with the exception of his original notes and a report that he authored in that matter. He did provide a log of the documents that he did not produce so that you could at least know what was in the file and what was not being produced. In Montana, the materials that Dr. Horvath did not produce in Arizona are not necessarily discoverable in family law cases. And Dr. Horvath is concerned that the father is using the Arizona board to obtain those materials in order to get documents that he would otherwise not be entitled to in Montana. So in other words, he's attempting to use the board via his expert witness to get to circumvent the law in Montana. Dr. Horvath is concerned that the dad is going to get those materials or learn the contents of those materials by following this board's deliberations and your public hearings, and then use those against the mother in Montana. So he's asking for the subpoena to be quashed and the complaint filed with the Arizona board to be stayed in order to allow the Montana board to complete its investigation and issue findings. And it seems that this is the best way to balance the interests of the state of Arizona in regulating Dr. Horvath, but also balancing Dr. Horvath's concerns about not doing something in Arizona that will hurt his client in Montana. So with that context, thank you for allowing me to provide that and for considering the motions to quash and the motion to stay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pantain. Do board members have any questions for Ms. Pantain? All All right, hearing none, I'm going to make a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of receiving legal advice.
Second.
I'm going to give the second to Dr. Medina, and all in favor, please say aye.
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 Staff, move us to a secure room. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All right. Everybody has made their way back from the breakout room. Appreciate Ms. Galvin for her legal advice during that period. And let's just make sure that I can see Ms. Pantane is also back. Going through my, we see her. Oh, there she is. There we are. All right, Ms. Pantian, we're going to go ahead and kind of have like take this probably in two parts. I think we're going to first go and have some discussion around the motion to quash our subpoena, and I'll go ahead and kick off with a motion, and then we'll have some discussion around that. I'm going to go ahead and make the motion that we deny the motion to quash and that we look at having the doctor produce his full records to board staff within 30 days at the conclusion of this meeting today. Do I have a second?
Second.
Dr. Stewart with a second. Now I will open that up to discussion by the board. Any discussion around that matter? Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. With the legal advice and discussion we've gotten from the Associate Attorney General, I think that it's clear that we can have those records and that any discoverability would be minimal. Because the records would be reviewed in executive session. So I certainly, support the idea to deny the motion to quash. Thank you.
Welcome. And I'll just add that, those will be in our possession for our review, as we kind of move forward. So I appreciate that discussion point. Any further discussion? Given the nature of this matter, Ms. Galvin, do we need a roll call?
You do not need a roll call.
All right. Then all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any oppose? Any abstain? Very good. Motion to quash is denied unanimously. Now, Ms. Pantane, moving to the stay request, I have a question, if you would be so kind to respond to, with regard to the status of the current custody hearings that are going on. Do you have any sort of timeline around the conclusion of that, how far down the road they are in that particular matter? And the reason I ask is that, your discussion around the perhaps information coming to light in a public hearing and how that might impact something, just wondering how much time, what a stay would look like and what that request would look like based on your understanding of the custody proceedings.
So I don't know when the custody proceedings are scheduled to end, if they are scheduled. My understanding was that this was an ongoing situation because these children are still pretty young, but I can find that out and provide that to you if that would be helpful. But I do not know if we know when they would be over.
So in your opinion, is this something that, or to your knowledge, is this something that wraps up in 2023, or is this going to be going into 2024?
It looks, just based off of what I've read, that it could go on for several years, very honestly, because I think the children are still young and the parents seem to be wanting to, it looks to me like things have been in place and then the parents keep trying to change them. I'm not entirely sure because I'm not as familiar with that, but I can get that information for you. But that's what it looks like to me just based on reading the materials. Yeah.
So then, with that and understanding what you have, the same for us, what information we have. Our concern there with a stay is that this gets punted for, 6 months, a year, you know, that does not serve this board or the state of Arizona well, given that the doctor is licensed here. And so that request for the stay bumps up against that, the realities of this particular custody battle, right? And so I think that's why, you know, I ask you those questions. And, I appreciate your willingness to come back and give us a status update at a future meeting. And I think that we well need that. Other board members, further questions for Ms. Pantain before we think about a motion here? So hearing that, I mean, I think that, you know, as I hear this, I think that maybe, you know, asking, I don't know if a stay is the right request, but do we, you know, does the board, in terms of its thought process, do we want to think about having Ms. Pantain come back in 30 days and give us a status update, and then we can talk about the realities of what a stay is? Or do we just grant the 30-day stay and have her come back and we discuss it at that point? But I think we can't kick this can down the road forever, and we definitely can't kick it down for into 2024 and beyond. So those are my thoughts there. Dr. Stewart, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that a 30-day stay is reasonable. I think anything beyond that, we're not serving the purpose of the state of Arizona, and we're not serving our mission as a board to govern our licensees. I think 30 days is a reasonable time. It looks like this child custody is going to be very protracted and will go on beyond the year 2024, according to my experience and what I've heard from the attorney. But a 30-day stay is reasonable. At that point in time, if there's nothing substantive that's reported, I move that we go ahead and continue investigation.
Yes, go ahead, Doug. Yes.
I'm wanting to know, I guess, if there is a partial stay of 30 days, does the board want a report, a written update with a copy of the docket from Ms. Pantain?
Yeah, I think that'd be acceptable. And then I think also just giving Ms. Pantain the information of how we protect that information, how information that's received by this board can be protected in executive session to be able to discuss PHI or to be able to discuss information or testimony that is confidential by state or federal law, or ARS 38431.0383, that she understands that this is not going to be, that those kinds of documents, that kind of information would not be out in public. Make sure that maybe Ms. Galvin, you can help bring us along with so that they're aware.
If she has questions regarding confidentiality, she can reach out to me, but
okay.
Complainants, interested parties, et cetera, do not receive the investigative material that is provided to the board. The documentation that Dr. Harvath is required to submit under the subpoena will not be disclosed to anyone but board members and staff and myself.
I appreciate that clarity. Dr. Medina, you were waiting patiently.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. I was just going to agree with Dr. Stewart's sort of summary of the point. I think this is a case that could drag for years, and it does not serve us nor the state of Arizona to kick this down the road. So I do agree with maybe like a 30-day stay, but then after that, I don't see much use in continuing to, move along that route.
Dr. Medina, why don't you go ahead? Would you be willing to put that in the form of a motion? We'll get a second, then we can have any further discussion.
I will try. So I move that we grant a 30-day stay for this case and for us to receive an update from Ms. Pantain in terms of where the case stands in the state of Montana, and we then review it at that time.
Second.
And if I may, just my understanding regarding this motion for the 30-day stay with a request for an update from Dr. Horvath's attorney, based upon receiving this, then this would go back before the board at the December 8th meeting. That's my understanding. Is that correct, Dr. Medina?
Yes, Dr. Gavin, this, Ms. Gavin, would this go into CSC first, or would it come straight to us, to the full board?
No, it will come back to the board for the board to decide whether there's a further stay.
Okay.
If there is not an additional stay, then you continue the investigation and it'll go back to the CSC.
CSC, yes. So then, yes, Ms. Michaels, it would come back to the full board.
All right. So we have motion, second, clarification. Do we have any further discussion? All right. Do we need a roll call for this, Ms. Gavin?
You do not.
Okay. Just want to make sure since we're in legal proceedings. Very good. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Very good. Matter unanimously carries on the motion for 30-day stay. Thank you very much, Ms. Pantane. If you have questions, obviously Ms. Galvin has extended that offer to help with any clarification for you around the report or around any other questions around confidentiality. Thank you very much. All right, moving forward. Well, now go ahead and actually, while we're here, Ms. Poe, do you want to, or Kathy, do we want to do a code word on the off chance we get to the 4-hour mark?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first code word is World Series. World Series. Thank you.
Wow. We can see where this theme's going to go. I don't want to hear the last code word, so let's hope we don't get 4 hours. Very good. Thank you for that. Let's go ahead and move to item number. We're going to go to. Are we still good on order, board staff? We're good to move to number 7.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, just want to make sure we're not skipping anything. 7. Okay. Discussion, consideration, possible action relating to the initial case review for the following complaint. The complaint is around Ellen Diamond, PhD. Dr. Medina, you are the lead for this complaint. So will you please provide a summary and that summary to include your recommendation, including the recommendation forwarded by the board or the complaint screening committee? Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Davies. So this is summary for complaint number 2352 against Ellen Diamond, PhD, holder of license number 2026, issued on December 29, 1992. Dr. Diamond maintains Carefree Psychological Services, PLLC. Complainant TJ participated in therapy sessions with Dr. Diamond from April through December 2022. In May 2023, TJ filed a complaint alleging that Dr. Diamond failed to provide him a billing statement for 4 sessions that happened in between the months of November and December 2022. TJ was getting reimbursed for services from the Maricopa County Victims Compensation Program. In her response, Dr. Diamond stated that a statement had been provided for that statement had been provided that included the first 2 November sessions and 1 December session. Dr. Diamond went on to explain that she had contracted COVID in December 22, 2022, right after the last December session took place, and was in bed for a week after contracting COVID and due to her illness. Dr. Diamond shared that billing for the 2015 sessions fell through the cracks. On April 19th, the Victims Compensation Program requested an itemized bill for the sessions completed by TJ under Dr. Diamond's care from April 20 through December 1st. On April 26th, Dr. Diamond sent Victim Services TJ's itemized statement. The following day, on April 27th, Dr. Diamond alerted Victim Services to another session done on December 15th. The Complaint Screening Committee reviewed this case on their August 16th meeting and decided to forward the case to the full board for review. And this concludes my summary to the board.
Thank you very much, Dr. Medina. Board members, are there any questions for Dr. Medina? Dr. Medina, did the CSC also look at the time? Was the continuing education already completed at the time of the CSC screening?
The continuing education, give me 1 second, was completed. I want to look at the certificate. Hold on. So the continuing education was completed on September 7th of 2023, which is after the CSC meeting. So okay. The CSC meeting took place on August 16th, 2023.
Very good. Okay. Thank you for that clarification. Is the complainant TJ present? And if so, would you like to make a brief statement to the board? I don't believe I'm seeing a TJ on my board and board staff. We have not received word back, correct?
Correct. I had not heard from TJ if he'd be participating today, but I do see that Dr. Diamond and her attorney, Ms. Thibodeau, are present.
I do see that. Dr. Diamond, I see you're present, and I've seen Ms. Thibodeau that you are also present. Could you please introduce yourself for the record? And either or both of you are welcome to make a statement to the board at this time. I respectfully ask that you keep that statement to 5 minutes or less.
Hi. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Good morning. Thank you, Chairman and board members. Since the CSC meeting on August 16th, Dr. Diamond took the advice also from that committee meeting and sent TJ another complete statement along with a refund check of $15. And she sent that certified mail on September 1st. And I know he was notified of the mailing from staff. That's TJ. And he picked up the certified mail actually closer to the end of October, when it was getting returned to Dr. Diamond. So he did pick it up, and Dr. Diamond verified that the check was cashed from her account. And I sent Jennifer today the signature from United States Postal Service for that pickup. And then after the board meeting, Dr. Diamond also voluntarily took the 3 hours of CE and patient records and risk management. And overall, Dr. Diamond has served this community for 31 years and with no prior complaints, and her motives were not dishonest or selfish. She's no pattern of misconduct, and she's not demonstrated any bad faith. And she did timely respond to the board and in good faith, worked on, her own personal knowledge with the CE and gave back, and mailed TJ. His statements and a refund check. So, Dr. Diamond requests the board to dismiss the complaint, and we appreciate your time and welcome any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Thibodeau. Dr. Stewart, it beats me to it. Board members, questions? Dr. Stewart, please kick us off.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Ms. Thibodeau, thank you for being here this morning. And so my understanding is that Dr. Diamond did indeed comply and send the complainant the statements requested. She also sent a refund check in the amount of $15 that has been cashed, and she has completed the continuing education units on patient records. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, it is.
Okay. Thank you. There's no more questions.
Yeah, thank you for that. Any other questions from board members? Ms. Thibodeau.
I have a question.
Yes, Dr. Millot.
Yeah, Dr. Diamond, thank you for being here. I'm just wondering, Is there anything you could have done so this matter didn't have to come before this board? You know, why did it? I mean, I'm just curious.
Dr. Millard,
go ahead, Ms. Tibbett.
Dr. Millard, I did want to add, Dr. Diamond did notify the victim's services on, like, what Dr. the Medina went over prior to TJ even giving the complaint to or filling out the complaint to this board. She notified them April 26th or 27th that they were missing a day on for the December 15th visit. On April 27th, TJ did do this complaint, from what I know, on May 2nd of this year. And I'm not sure if there was much. She did send him statements prior to that. There was an email that states he received the statements even in January. And it's just more of him. And Victim Services is very slow in, I guess, turning around their paperwork. And, you know, she didn't know at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I'm reading the email. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, Dr. Stewart.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Ms. Thibodeau, I don't know that I fully understood the answer to Dr. Malott's question. Dr. Malott's question, I believe, was what could Dr. Diamond have done to prevent this from getting to a point of a board complaint? So in her CEUs about patient records, what did she learn in that that could have diverted a complaint at all? I mean, what?
Oh, I understand. I understand. She did.
Is it possible to hear from Dr. Diamond?
Sure.
Please.
Well, I think there were some challenging communication issues. I hadn't realized that that one session did not get billed. I had three sessions that morning and became ill that afternoon. And didn't realize those morning sessions had not been submitted for billing. So when he kept asking me for these, basically the same thing without specifying the session, I did not quite understand what he was looking for. Additionally, he's a challenging person to work with, quite honestly. As a psychologist, I feel I have to always advocate for my patients. I'm on their side, so to speak. So it puts me in a rather difficult position. But, you know, this is not someone who communicated that well with me, and I just didn't understand what the problem was, what he was looking for. Had I recognized it better, I would have taken care of it sooner, but I didn't realize that 12:15 session had gone unbilled.
So it did not come out of, like, no way. There was, you know, an error in the billing, and then, you know, it finally came to light, so. And,
Yes, I acknowledge I made a mistake.
Good.
Thank you.
Dr. Medina.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Thank you for being here, Dr. Diamond. I'm wondering what do you have in place now so this doesn't happen again?
Well, I've instituted some different billing practices. I now keep a kind of secondary schedule that I review. I've sort of streamlined some of the billing stuff that I do, so things that are missing become evident at the end of the month, as opposed to perhaps not at all. So I have changed some of that.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Any further questions for Ms. Diamond or for For her attorney, Ms. Thibodeau. Any other statements from Ms. Diamond or Ms. Thibodeau at this time? I'm not hearing any, then I will let Ms. Dr. Medina kick off the discussion on this matter and move us towards a motion.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Davey. I think the 12:15 session was overlooked for the reasons that Dr. Diamond stated. I don't think it was ill intention. When Dr. Diamond realized that happened and then submitted documentation to correct the issue. So, in my opinion, I moved to dismiss the case. I don't see anything to, uphold unprofessional conduct here.
Second.
Yeah, second. I agree. So a motion to dismiss Dr. Stewart with the second. Any further discussion by board members?
I appreciate Dr. Stewart clarifying my question. Thank you.
And I appreciate Dr. Diamond answering the question as well. And thank you for being here. That helps us move these processes along so much smoother. All right. All in favor of a motion to dismiss? Please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstaining? Motion unanimously carries to dismiss this complaint. Thank you, Ms. Thibodeau. Thank you, Dr. Diamond.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, moving along. Number 9, discussion, consideration, possible action, whether the board should accept jurisdiction regarding 2 additional complaints filed against Dr. Batani, PhD, or whether the legal principle of, I've been practicing this all day, race judica, I couldn't do it, Gene. I tried.
Judicata.
Very Latin. Judicata. All right. But whether or not the principle of res judicata is applicable. Ms. Michelson, would you please provide a review? I know you practice the term as well, so you can go ahead and flex your Latin.
Yes, I sure did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In July of this year, the board received a complaint from complainant MG against psychologist Bhupen Bhutani. MG received therapy services through Midwestern University's Therapy Institute. Those services were received with a graduate level therapist who was supervised by another psychologist, not Dr. Bhutani. Dr. Bhutani is a professor at the university as well as the associate program director for Midwestern. It was noted that he did not provide any therapeutic services to MG, but they had one meeting and had exchanged several emails regarding some various concerns that MG had with the services that he had provided at Midwestern. MG's complaint alleged that Dr. Bhutani had violated his patient's rights, altered his medical records, and other various issues. This complaint was reviewed by the CSC just at its last meeting on October 18th. The committee heard from both parties, and the CSC unanimously dismissed that complaint. That case was closed. A day prior to this October 18th CSC meeting, the board did receive 2 additional complaints against Dr. Bhutani, arising from the same set of facts involving MG and his experience at Midwestern Institute. It was noted by staff that these 2 complaint forms did list different names for the complainant, but contained the same mailing address listed on the form, and the handwriting was also appeared to be almost identical. So the allegations in these 2 new complaints are nearly identical to those set forth in MG's complaint, the one that was dismissed by the CSC just 2 weeks ago. These 2 complaints are before the board today to determine whether to decline opening in light of the legal principle called res judicata, as there may be legal grounds to not process these complaints given the identical allegations of the complaint that was previously dismissed. So Ms. Galvin can certainly provide the board with a better understanding of the principle of res judicata than I could, but please let me know if there are any questions.
That was good use of the term res judicata. Any other questions from board members for Dr. Michelson, or for Ms. Michelson? I just elevated you to Dr. Ms. Michelson. All right. Thank you. Ms. Galvin, as the board's legal counsel, do you wish to offer any additional information while in public session, perhaps about res judicata?
If the board has questions, we can go into executive session. You've been provided a memo containing legal advice about this principle. Essentially, at a very high level, it means that the issues and the claims brought before the board involving the board and the other individual, which would be Dr. Bhutani in this case, have already been resolved. In this case, the parties are the same in the sense that it's Dr. Bhutani and the board, and the issues claims have been resolved because they're nearly identical. If they are identical, they from the complaint that was submitted to the CSC and dismissed, all arising out of actions with this complainant's experience at Midwest.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. I found your memo to be thorough in answering the questions I had. Mr. Nguyen.
Are you willing to entertain a motion at this time?
Absolutely.
Motion to dismiss those two complaints.
Second.
I would suggest that the motion may be not to open them, not to process them.
Okay. Yes.
Motion to not open or process the two complaints.
Second.
All right. So I've got the motion for the board to exercise its discretion and not to process the two new complaints against Dr. Bhutani. And then I've got a second by Dr. Medina. Do I have any further discussion? All right. Hearing none, then all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none. Any abstaining? Hearing none. Motion carries unanimously. Thank you. All right. Okay, moving forward, we're going to move to number 10. Discussions, consideration, possible action regarding the Committee on Behavior Analysts' recommendation to deny the request by Amada Taro to withdraw her license renewal application and to initial a denial of said application. Dr. Stenhoff, you are the lead for this agenda item. Will you please provide a summary of the matter to include the recommendation made by the Committee on Behavior Analysts?
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Just a moment while I pull up my document.
And I'll just say after this one, we'll go ahead and take a comfort break after number 10.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. Ms. Montillo, she met the requirements, and I'm going to present this in two different aspects. There was an issue that the CBA reviewed that dealt with her license reinstatement, and the second piece of whether an unlicensed practice complaint should be opened. She did meet the requirements of Statute 32-2091.07C that she submitted her renewal within 2 months of her birth month. She paid her fee and completed the CEs required. Based on that, I recommend, and the CBA also recommended that the application be accepted, her renewal application be accepted for renewal. So,
Dr. Stenhoff, are you, which matter are you looking at?
What number are you referring to?
We're on the one for Ms. Taro with the withdrawal of her license. I think you skipped ahead, maybe.
I'm sorry, Dr. Davey. You're right. Just a moment.
You jumped ahead. Which
I was just excited about this other one. So
if you'd like to pivot, we can allow you to have number 11.
No. We'll do it in the recommended order from the board staff. So let me take a look at this.
And I do know the numbering was switched up a couple times, but
I think my agenda that I was working off was dated. So thank you for the guidance through this.
No problem. Well, right. We can see that you're ready for 11 as well. So, good job.
All right.
All right. Number 10. We'll kick it off again. Number 10, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding the Committee on Behavior Analyst recommendation to deny the request by Amada Taro to withdraw her license renewal application and to issue a denial of that application. Dr. Stenhoff, you are the lead of that agenda item. Please provide us a summary on that matter to include the recommendation made by the committee.
All right. Thank you very much, Dr. Kitty. So Ms. Tro was initially licensed by the Arizona Board of Psychologists in December 2017. She put her license on voluntary inactive status April 1st of 2019. She did submit a renewal application and reported on that application that she was placed, that she was under investigation by the BACB, and then investigation found that there was some issues with her practice. Ms. Tro and her, so they revoked her certification. Ms. Tro and her attorney filed a appeal to that, and the appeal was denied by the BACB. In addition to that, when she renewed her renewal application, she also failed to indicate that her New York license was also in question as well. Upon review, the CBA made recommendations we deny her request to renew her application, that we deny her request for renewal. So that's a recommendation from the CBA, and that ends my review. And if you have any further questions, feel free.
Any further questions for Dr. Stenhoff? Yeah, this is a fairly straightforward case. Those of you that reviewed the documentation and the information that was put through the BACB's revocation as well as our recommendations, I believe that, at this particular point, I'm willing to make the motion that we deny the request to withdraw our license renewal and that we issue that denial.
Second.
Well,
oh, go ahead. Yes, further discussion. We have a second. Dr. Malad, do we have a second? You have a discussion matter?
So I'll be denying. I'm a little
confused. I'm going to put forth two motions. So let's put the first motion. First motion will be, will she be permitted? My motion is to deny her permission. Or deny
Dr. Stenhoff, do we need to split the motions, Ms. Galvin, or can we do them together?
You don't have to split the motion. We already have one motion on the floor that is both to deny the request to withdraw and issue the notice of denial.
Okay. So we've already got the motions.
Those motion stands in.
Yeah. So Dr. Watt, what's your question?
So to issue a denial, doesn't the person need a hearing? I mean, we can just issue it.
If the vote passes and we issue her notice of denial, she has the right to request a hearing within 30 days after it is submitted to her.
Okay.
So she'll get a hearing if she asks for it.
Okay. That's what I wanted to make sure.
But I will, just for the sake of the public on the call, I do want to take a step back, because I did not ask if Ms. Tro was present today. And I don't believe we had indication that she was going to be present, but I want to make sure that I did not skip over her. Okay, good. Very good. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. In terms of the materials provided, it seems clear that the behavior analyst is intending not to practice in Arizona. And so I think to go ahead and approve the motion for the denial.
All right. So we have a motion I made the motion, so I guess I should be able to know it, to deny the request for withdrawal and to issue the denial. And so we have the second, Dr. Stewart. We've had discussion. Any further discussion?
You do need a roll call on this.
Very good. All right, Ms. Poe.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Medina?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Dr. Stenhoff?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
Mr. Nguyen?
Yes.
Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
Thank you very much. As promised, it's 9:46. Why don't we take a 10-minute comfort break, come back at... Medina, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All right, we've got everyone back. Very good. Just want to see if by chance, did we see that Dr. Montillo was, I didn't see her earlier on the, anywhere on the board. I don't see her here.
I'm here. Just to clarify, I'm not a doctor.
Oh, sorry. I'm just giving everybody, I'm giving everybody doctor status today in this moment. Sorry about that.
No, that's totally fine.
Okay, very good. I just wanted to make sure if you were here that we were back. All right, it is now 9:58. Dr. Stenhoff, let's move on to your agenda item number 11, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding the Committee on Behavior Analysts, a recommendation to the board regarding the licensee's reinstatement request submitted by Cassandra Montillo. Dr. Stenhoff, you are the lead. Can you please provide a summary of the matter and include the recommendation made by the Committee on Behavior Analysts?
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Montillo's license expired in August 31 of 2023. She submitted a reinstatement request on September 26 of 2023. She met her CE requirements. She also met the state statute requirements by submitting her application or renewal within 2 months of her birth month, paid her fee. As I mentioned, she completed her CEs. The Committee on Behavior Analysts recommended that the board approve her application. I don't know if we want to start there with that motion and discussion with that and then discuss the incident of unlicensed practice, or would you rather me continue with that component as well?
Why don't we split them? You want to start with the first one?
Okay. So given that she met the requirements of that of the statute by submitting everything on time and completing her CEs, I make a motion that we approve her renewal for licensure.
I'll second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the first motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Aye. Any opposed? Any abstaining? All right. The first motion carries. Dr. Stenhoff, do you wish to continue?
Okay. And then there was another issue. Ms. Montillo also practiced during that time between the August 31st and September 26th without a license. However, her supervisor, Ms. Bechtold, indicated through a letter of attestation of that she did supervise her over that time and provided the dates in which she directly observed or had direct contact with her. In fact, the number that was the number of contacts that they had between the two of them would exceeded the requirements by the BACB by a supervisee. So while there is a possible issue of unlicensed practice, she was supervised during that period of time. And again, we do have a letter indicating that. And so given that information too, I would also make a motion that we not entertain or not open a complaint investigation for the unlicensed practice.
Second.
Very good. Any further discussion? All right. So motion, second. No further discussion. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Very good. Any opposed? Any abstaining? Hearing none, motion carries. Very good. Let's move on to item number 12. Item number 12, discussion, consideration, and possible action. Who am I echoing? Somebody. See if that goes better. There we go. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding the Committee on Behavior Analyst recommendation to the board for licensee reinstatement request submitted by Elizabeth Gassard. I'm the lead on this agenda item. I'll provide the summary of this matter and the recommendation. And so very similar to the matter Dr. Stenhoff just brought forward, we received a notification from the licensee regarding her request for reinstatement. The license had expired on July 31st. The licensee has provided us information with continuing education requirements of 18.75 total hours, including 3 hours of ethics that were completed between May 6th and July 31st. And we've got a total of 30 continuing education credits, including 5 ethics that were activities submitted by approved providers. During that discussion of the reinstatement, we also had the discussion around the Ms. Cassard's practice while she was unlicensed, and therefore we requested requested more information with regard to the supervisor that was overseeing Ms. Cassard's practice during that time. We did receive a letter that provided some information, but we have since the committee has asked for additional details. The agenda item today is on the reinstatement request submitted, and that we would like to go ahead and grant that request, and then the committee on behavior analysts may wish to move forward with further information with regard to the complaint for unlicensed practice. So questions I can answer on that. Ms. Pakenham, that is where we landed, right? We were just doing the first part, correct? Just nodded the head. I know you're struggling. Okay. Very good. Then I'll go ahead and make the motion to go ahead and move forward with the reinstatement request.
Second.
Yep, I'm going to give it to Dr. I'm going to give it to Mr. Wynn on the second. Any further discussion? All right. Hearing none, then go ahead and all in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstaining? Very good. Motion carries. Thank you very much. All right. Ms. Pakenham, are you ready to take on number 13?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I do want to take this opportunity to apologize to board members and the public. I am battling a cold, or a cold is battling me more accurately. So hopefully, I'll do my best. Hopefully this isn't too painful. I may need to pause and sort of control some of my coughing along the way, but I'll try.
Fair enough. Dr. Medina, would you mind muting yourself? I don't know if we're just getting a little bit of feedback. There we go. I don't know how it's coming from your computer or why, but I think it's coming from yours. I'm sorry. All right, very good. Then I'll kick us off with as much as possible, then turn it over to you, Ms. Pakenham. So this is discussion, consideration, possible action on the request to withdraw the license application with the fee refund and resolution of the adjudication of complaint 2346 against Dr. Jennifer Fowler, PsyD. Ms. Pakenham is going to provide us a brief status report on this particular complaint. Thank you,
Mr. Chair. Yes, this agenda item does compel the board to consider multiple issues. The board will remember, of course, that Dr. Jennifer Fowler had been admitted to the RAMP program in December of 2022. And under that program, she was placed into the monitoring terms under the stipulated confidential rehabilitation agreement. And she was in compliance with the terms of that agreement until two episodes in March of 2023, On the on March 17th, she failed to or refused to submit to a hair test, which was ordered by the monitoring program. And then on March 20th, she failed to comply with her daily check-in requirement under the program. She notified the program that she was going to withdraw. She resigned from her position as a psychologist, and she notified the board that she would be allowing her psychologist license to expire on May 31 of 2023. So in April, the board reviewed this information and elected to open a complaint 23-45, alleging noncompliance with the terms of a board order. And so it was at that point in time that she was no longer in the confidential monitoring program, and this matter became public record. On July 7th, the board conducted the initial review of complaint 2346. Dr. Fowler was present for this review, and during the discussion with the board, what she presented at that time was that she had decided she was willing to resume being monitored and rehabilitated under the terms stipulated by the board, and that she did wish to renew her license and resume practicing as a psychologist. The board directed staff to work with legal counsel to prepare a new consent agreement encapsulating many of the monitoring terms that existed in the previous agreement, but modifying others. And so we notified Dr. Fowler, informed her of how this process would work. While that was in that agreement was being drafted, Dr. Fowler did submit her renewal application to the office. In doing so, she was required to present or submit documentation to demonstrate that she was in compliance with the continuing education requirements. Upon reviewing that material, we found that she was deficient for, I believe it was 6 hours of documentation. So some of her hours were not supported by certificates or other verifications of completion. So she was notified of a deadline by which to supply the missing documents or certificates. We also presented to her the new proposed consent agreement containing the monitoring terms, and supplied her with a deadline by which to respond, either accepting the agreement or providing the points that she disagreed with for either reconciliation by staff or reconciliation by the board. She did not respond to that deadline. And so on October 1st of 2023, after not hearing from her for some time, Dr. Fowler notified staff that she wishes to seek a refund of her license renewal application fee. She stated that she is refusing to sign the proposed consent agreement. She did not offer any sort of, you know, negotiation to its terms. And she stated that she does not wish to practice as a psychologist after all. So we have notified her of this review. I don't see that she is present today unless she's joined under a phone number that I don't recognize. But that is my summary, and I can answer any questions that the board may have relative to the staff's report.
Don't see her either on there. Just a question. Like at this point, I mean, she's still in non-compliance with the board order, correct? Yeah. And a withdrawal at this point, if we were to allow the withdrawal, that means we have no record of anything that's been going on. There's nothing reportable to any particular database. The withdrawal essentially ends it. And so I don't see that that's even a option. I appreciate the request to happen, but that to me seems like that's just not even in the realm of possibility, but I'll save that for discussion, I guess. Thank you, Ms. Packinen. Questions from Ms. Packinen? Okay. I don't think Dr. Fuller is here. I think we've said that not necessarily been responsive to our request. So I guess first question, right? Consider whether to allow Dr. Fowler to withdraw her license, renewal application, refund the processing fees she was requesting, and then determine, and then we can kind of go to the open complaint. So I think I will go ahead and make the motion to deny the withdrawal of her license and deny the request for a refund.
Second.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Do I have any further discussion around the first part of that? All right. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Very good. Any opposed? Any abstaining? All right. Motion unanimously carries. To the second part, proceeding with the open complaint. I mean, we are essentially in another non-compliant situation where we have a board order that she is not completed. We have incomplete CEUs. We still have some time to get those CEUs done if she was to so choose. But yeah, I mean, I'm open to further discussion around the matter, or if we'd like, we can get some legal advice from Ms. Galvin in an executive session on how to proceed.
If you believe that she is not qualified to be licensed, given the fact that she is in violation of a board order, the appropriate action would be to deny her application for renewal. And upon the grounds that she is in violation of the board order, if she hasn't completed the requisite CEs, whatever you believe the facts are that mm-hmm. justify that denial, you would articulate them on the record. If you vote to deny her, she will then have the opportunity to request a hearing.
So very similar to what we talked about with Dr. Millott earlier, is that denial, if we are going to move to a denial, we already said we're not going to let her withdraw. We're going to move to the denial based on the findings of the facts of the case at this particular point. That would then allow Dr. Fowler to move to a formal hearing with us, correct?
If she wanted to appeal that denial, a formal hearing would be held.
But she would have to appeal that.
She would.
Okay. Any other questions from Ms. Galvin here in public session? In terms of the support for the denial, I mean, the issue around the core, I mean, the action of not following a board order is the main sticking point here, correct? I mean, that's where she has very clear understanding of what's been asked of her, what she needs to complete, and she has run afoul of that. Would we need any other more? Do we need anything else besides that information to be able to, in terms of the facts that you would need, Ms. Galvin?
Her failure to comply with the board order is a sufficient basis upon which to deny her application for renewal.
That's what I believe, right? And then she has administrative rights and procedures that she could then enact if she wanted to come forth.
Right? Yeah, the notice of denial will inform her of those rights and how to exercise them.
Very good. All right, any further discussion or deliberation, I guess, before we move forward with the motion?
Mr. Chair, I have a question. This might be related to board staff, but in the event that the board denies request, is there a clearinghouse that other states access to that would have that information if Dr. Fowler were to apply for licensure in another state?
the denial of Dr. Senhoff, board members, the denial would ultimately be reported to the National Practitioners Data Bank, which can be accessed by all other jurisdictions.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any further deliberations? All right. If not, I'll be happy to entertain a motion. I'm happy to make Dr. Stewart. I was going to say, I'm happy
to that we deny the application based upon her being in violation of current active board order.
Second.
Very good. So we have a motion, we have a second. And do we have any further discussion around this? All right. Hearing none, again, this is denial, so this does not require a roll call on this one.
It does, in fact.
It doesn't. Get a chance on that one. All right, Ms. Poe, you're on.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Davey?
Yes.
Dr. Medina?
Yes.
Dr. Malott?
Yes.
Thank you. Dr. Stenhoff?
Yes.
Dr. Stewart?
Yes.
Mr. Nguyen?
Yes.
Vote is unanimous. Motion carries.
Thank you very much, Ms. Poe. Moving on to number 14, discussion consideration possible action regarding the request for clarification of terms of the consent agreement offered to Ann Eberhardt, SID, applicant for licensure. Ms. Packinen, I believe you have an update on this matter for us.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I believe that my memorandum outlined for the board how it happened that there is a disparity in terms of what board staff heard the board articulate for purposes of establishing terms of the consent agreement that was extended to Dr. Eberhardt. The consent agreement would grant her licensure on a restricted basis and also prescribed certain other terms to include continuing education. So what we heard the board indicate that you wanted in to include be included in those terms, and what the applicant and her counsel heard were not the same thing. And so I've explained how I believe that that came to be in my memorandum. However, I'm going to ask both Dr. Eberhardt and her attorney, Ms. Whalen, they're here today. I think that I'm confused as I've heard from them within the last 24 hours that they do believe that they just wish to move forward and agree to the terms of the consent agreement, but perhaps that's best articulated by them because I don't know if they are actually proceeding with the original request or if they are going to move forward and sign the consent agreement. So I think we want to hear from them at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Packinen. Any questions for Ms. Packinen for board members before we move on to Ms. Wallen and Dr. Eberhardt? All right, hearing none, I will go ahead and recognize Ms. Whalen and Ms. Dr. Eberhardt. Would you like to make a brief statement and clarify for us where you stand in terms of the consent agreement that has been put forward and executed?
Yes, thank you so much. Again, my name is Kelsey Whalen. I am the attorney for Dr. Eberhardt. First, I just wanted to apologize for the confusion on our end. Recently, with respect to, you know, our position on the one term that I think there was some confusion about being in the consent agreement, you know, our position on that hasn't necessarily changed. However, delaying the signing of the consent agreement or moving forward with the consent agreement has had more, you know, logistical impacts on Dr. Eberhardt being able to get a position as a psychologist. It's been a little bit difficult these past few months Recently, she's been denied a job offer because of you having to wait a little bit, which is the nature of it. But you know, really kind of balancing the cost of delaying to get clarification on this term or just moving forward to, you know, make sure Dr. Eberhardt can, you start working and you comply with the terms of the consent agreement, I think is certainly something that we've been weighing with. So I greatly apologize for the back and forth. I know it was, you know, late notice on our end too. But if it is still possible, we would like to get clarification on this one term to hopefully, you know, get this resolved. And then Dr. Eberhardt hopefully can find a position very soon and, you know, get moving forward as a psychologist. So thank you all for, you know, hearing this matter today.
Thank you. And then do you want to just continue on your request? I mean, you might as well continue to speak on what the clarification is you're seeking.
Yes, thank you. So there's been a couple board meetings. I know that we've spoken. So I think going back to, or I guess first, with respect to the board's motion, you know, our understanding is that the board sought to follow Dr. Lazarowitz's recommendation with respect to the bullet points 1, 3, and 4 in her evaluation, and then to omit the second bullet point, which would be omitting the second, the graduate level coursework related to ethics and diversity. Kind of backtracking to the July board meeting, I think I had extensively addressed this issue with respect to a concern that was raised by Dr. Lazarowitz on diversity and ethics, and that it all kind of stemmed from one supervisor's statement because he appeared to be a little bit concerned about Dr. Eberhardt expressing her concern that a colleague had stated that all white women support white supremacy, which, again, would have been protected activity. And I think also would have been maybe concerning if she had agreed with the statement. But I think aside from that one supervisor's statement, there was an extensive history of Dr. Eberhardt being open to diverse populations, supported by, you know, numerous evaluations. And so, you know, I think that was our main concern during that board meeting, which I think is, I'm not sure if it was the main purpose of bringing Dr. Lazarowitz back to the August board meeting, but I know it was one concern that the board wanted to address with Dr. Lazarowitz and if she saw additional issues with respect to diversity and ethics. And I think during that August board meeting, Dr. Lazarowitz had said, you know, that it did really stem from that one supervisor, and then providing that context, I think, clarified that, you know, this hasn't been an issue, or that Dr. Eberhardt doesn't have a history of, you know, not being open to diversity and ethics and has performed well. So I think this is what led to the board omitting bullet point.
So if I could just interrupt for a second. So the issue at hand is the continuing education coursework that within 180 days, we have asked that there be 12 hours of continuing education done. And then it reads 6 of which are in the area of ethical psychological practice. Okay, right. So that's the 6. And then the other 6 are in the treatment of diverse populations within the psychology field. So I'm unclear as to why that, I'm unclear as to why that's unclear with you. That gives Dr. Eberhardt a lot of latitude with regard to what classes and what continuing education she would engage in to be able to fulfill those. This is not a diversity question. It's about the diverse populations that psychologists work with regards to whether that's adolescents, adults, those with various disorders. Like, we were very unprescriptive and gave a lot of latitude there for Dr. Eberhardt to fulfill this requirement. So I'm concerned at the interpretation when the order is quite clear. So help me understand where we're not seeing eye to eye on our request on the continuing education coursework.
Yeah. So I think Dr. Eberhardt doesn't have an issue with completing this requirement. I think it was more of our concern of, you know, where this requirement was coming from, and if it did come from that bullet point being omitted. And, you know, we just really, I think, were focused on what was the board's intent and whether this was the board's intent that this continuing education requirement was added to it as well on top of the continued treatment, the supervision. You know, we didn't have an issue with any of that. And I mean, frankly, we don't have an issue with doing the continuing education. Of course, she has a continuing education requirement regardless as psychologist, but I think our concern was with, you know, whether this was what the board intended and whether there was this continuing concern related to this issue that was, you know, brought up in that, in Dr. Lazarowitz's evaluation that I thought had really been addressed further.
Yeah, again, I would just point back to the consent agreement. The findings of fact are what drives the CEU discussion. And the findings of fact are very clear as to what the applicant, in this case, Dr. Eberhardt, selected yes to in our application process and what was then provided in terms of details. Those are the reasons for the consent agreement. Those are the reasons for all the stipulations, including the continuing education. And I believe that's laid out pretty clearly in the findings of fact section of why we landed on the decision that we did and then why we put forward this information to you all to comply or to consider, sign off on, and then comply with.
I think with respect to the findings of fact, I believe it was, I mean, I think this is more of the finalized version, but there was also that continued statement that there were concerns raised by prior supervisors about diversity and ethics. So I know we had cut back on that a little bit, but I thought that that was the intent for including this requirement. And I think that was our concern is, you know, if that is the intent, is there still this underlying concern, which it didn't seem or appear that there was in the last board meeting.
Yeah, I don't see that term in the findings of fact. There are multiple references to like the larger pieces of the discussions around being terminated from a position, being terminated from a postdoc training program. I mean, those are what's driving our recommendations, right? I mean, holistically, the board did not lean on any one particular statement to land on the continuing ed credit that are presented to you. It's the holistic piece here. And so And again, the latitude that's provided in our statement around the CEU units is very clear. And so do you understand what I'm saying? Do you understand how to move forward with this?
Yes. And I agree. I mean, there is a wide latitude here, I guess, with respect to, I think the prior language of the consent agreement. It had included that there were concerns raised by prior supervisors. And I know we've taken out that language because it was agreed that there weren't prior concerns by multiple supervisors with respect to diversity and ethics. It was just that one supervisor. And so I think that's where our concern was, is that this was really just, you know, switching the bullet point number two in the evaluation to, instead of graduate level, it was now continuing education, when, you know, our understanding is that the board just omitted that wholly. And so we just wanted to make sure this was in line with the board's intent. And if that is the case, then Dr. Eberhardt's, you know, absolutely prepared to continue on with this. We just wanted to make sure it is in line that, you know, with what the board intended.
Given the reading of the continuing education coursework and the fact that we put it together for you in the consent agreement, that is, our intent is 12 continuing education credits, and the six of which are in the area of ethical psychology practice and six of which are in the treatment of diverse populations within the psychology field. And that is my position. I will let Ms. Galvin or any others chime in terms of clarification around that.
You know, based on some of the recommendations from the Fitness for Beauty, I think that continuing ed coursework is right in line, and I'm surprised they're even having this discussion.
Yeah. Any further questions for any other? I mean, again, there's really no action here. I mean, I guess it's like we can continue to have this discussion. Happy to call Dr. Stewart and then Dr. Medina for you to be able to answer questions. Dr. Stewart?
Thank you, Dr. Davey. I certainly agree with Dr. Malott that, you know, it's I'm surprised we're having this discussion. I agree with Dr. Davey that the request for more for CEUs on diverse populations is based on all diverse populations, as pointed out, adult, child, elderly. So it's not racial, ethnic as much as it's much broad spread. Now, there's a lot of latitude there for Dr. Eberhardt to get training in any of those areas. So I'm surprised that we're having this discussion, and I think we need to move on. Thanks.
Yep, Dr. Medina, and then Ms. Galvin.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. I echo what Dr. Malott and Dr. Stewart said. I am surprised that we are having this discussion. These are areas that all of us as psychologists, licensed psychologists, strive to develop our own competency. And I agree with also Dr. Davey's points that this was sort of a holistic recommendation. And my last point is, out of all the requirements, this is probably the easiest requirement, the one that is easiest to comply with because of the latitude that it provides. So I don't know, I guess my last, I do have one question. Are you going to sign the consent agreement or not?
Yeah, definitely. That's what the back and forth was. I was thinking of signing it yesterday, but then there was the thought that maybe it'd be good to talk about it since this had been prepared for such a long time. And so it would be, it wouldn't be the best thing to do to just not discuss when this had been on the agenda. I care both about diversity and ethics and am happy to learn. I just simply was surprised by it being included because the graduate courses had been excluded. And so I thought that meant of those requirements would be excluded as well, but I'm happy to do it.
These are requirements that all of us as psychologists have. Continuing education required are four. These are six. I mean, again, this falls in line with our continuing education requirements. So.
And really quick, I just wanted to, chime in a little bit. So we agree, I mean, with everything the board's saying, it's not an overly, stringent requirement. And again, she has this continuing education requirement regardless. So we were just concerned with the language of the motion was that they were going to move forward with following the bullet points 1, 3, and 4, and then to omit number 2. And it felt like that this was number 2. And so we were wondering where this requirement came from. And if it's because this is just, part of, being a psychologist, which, she has a requirement anyway. So we were just confused with that component. And with respect to signing the consent agreement, she does have to have the job lined up in order to move forward with signing it. So I think that was our biggest concern too. But I think that absolutely is her intention as soon as, it's finalized and we're able to sign in and move forward. And I think she absolutely will.
And just because Ms. Galvin, you have your hand up.
Thank you. If the board's, the consensus is to have the consent agreement as written remain on the table, you may wish to state that Dr. Eberhardt has a certain period of time, whether it's 5 business days or 2 weeks to sign, or you would move the matter to formal hearing so that this is not delayed any further. Give her a deadline to sign.
Dr. Malott, you had one other.
Yeah, and I think to me, taking a graduate level coursework is hardship because those cost a lot of money, but taking engineering ed is definitely You know, there's pre-CEs available. There's, you know, there's all kinds of options available. So it's less of a hardship than taking a graduate level course at a university, you know, because we do charge tuition. So.
Yeah.
And with respect to the deadline, if, I mean, Dr. Eberhardt will have to wait to sign off until she has a job lined up. And so we do ask for a little bit of time so she can, you know, continue to get a position lined up so she can start meeting these requirements after signing.
I don't believe that's how that's going to fall. We will sign and then we will work through the practice supervisor piece following that, because she needs to sign off on this now for this to go into effect. Like, we can't keep delaying the signing of the consent agreement. And I'll let Ms. Galvin take a look at some information and respond to you. We'll let Dr. Medina address the group right now. Dr. Medina?
Oh, I wanted to go ahead with a motion, if that's okay, unless we need, I mean, we can hear from Ms. Galvin in regards to your clarification.
I'm unclear why we would wait to sign. There's nothing in here that order granted immediately. Sean let us Ms. Wellen, what do you believe in the consent agreement that would trigger a delay? The supervised practice piece is, it is not, like, signing on this does not mean that she has to have that position in place. It's that she will get that, she will get the supervised practice supervisor and have that has an unrestricted license and good standing will pre-approve that by board staff. But until, like, that is a work in progress, that does not delay the signature of this.
So I think in my prior conversations, I believe with Heidi, was that she needed to, you know, be supervised while she's practicing, but she obviously can't practice until she has a position. So I think that was the concern. If we can go ahead and sign it, I think that's obviously, you know, I think what we would prefer to move forward. But that was, you know, part of the delay is making sure she could have a job and get that lined up. And that was some of the concern we had.
Scott, do you want to change on the language on supervised practice? I'm scanning it right now, but
I think it's the first paragraph under the order provides that her license shall not issue until such time she secured a practice supervisor. Mm-hmm. So I think you can obtain a practice supervisor and then her license will be issued. Yeah. So, like, once it's signed, the employer can see that it's a matter of her getting a practice supervisor and her license will be issued then immediately. I think Dr. Eberhardt has a question.
Oh, yes, Dr. Eberhardt.
Thanks. So just to clarify, I can sign today if I wanted to, which I do. I can sign today. And then I have a supervisor already lined up. So once I get that supervisor to send the documentation to the board, then I'll be issued the license.
Yeah, if that practice monitor supervisor is approved by the board, yes.
Yes, they should have been pre-approved. So if you have that individual, as soon as you can, get, like, my recommendation would be to speak with your legal counsel, sign if appropriate, and get us that, then get us the information on this individual you identified so that the board can screen them and make sure that they're appropriate.
Great. That's wonderful. Appreciate that.
So do we understand the timing, Ms. Whalen?
Yes, I guess my concern was, I mean, she has to get supervised. So if she signs it and the time frame starts, I mean, if she can't practice as a supervisor, does the time clock not start until she has a position lined up then?
You're talking about the time frame for the supervised practice, the time frame starts as a supervision period for 12 months. So it can't start until there is the supervisor. If you're talking about the CEU requirement, then that starts immediately upon signing that. That does not require, that's within the first 120 days of the term of this order. So that language is clear of, like, that's what, that clock starts ticking upon signature.
So my concern is she'll have the supervisor lined up, but she doesn't have work to start doing to be supervised over. So I know she has a requirement of completing so many hours a week. So I don't know Does that matter?
Different things. I think you're getting them. This needs to be signed. Then when you get the practice, that will start the clock and the supervisor. The 12 months will start once she starts working along with the supervisor.
Yeah.
So
the board's not going to take enforcement action if there is nothing to be supervised. The board understands she has to get a job in order to be supervised. But the job doesn't come until she gets a practice monitor, and the license doesn't come until she gets a practice monitor.
Okay. Thank you.
The only thing that's triggered immediately on the signature is the clock on the continuing ed. After that, you'll work through the practice supervisor, and then you'll work through the job, securing a job, probably providing some of this information to potential employer as well as the person that will be providing the supervision. And then once that starts, then that's put over to us. Well, I believe it's a temporary license that will go, a restricted temporary license that will go. That then is when the clock will start on the 12 months of employment and supervision and the 10 hours of supervised professional experience. That's when all that'll kick in. Like, the board is not unreasonable in terms of understanding the timing and the nuance regarding this. And I believe the language in the consent agreement is clear to like when those kick off.
Okay. Thank you. I thought that's why there wasn't a time frame on it to begin with, but I appreciate that. That's helpful in clarifying for us.
So do we need a motion, Ms. Galvin?
I don't think there is a motion, right? Or unless we're going to give them a time frame.
Yeah, you may want to confirm that the consent agreement offer remains on the table for the next number of days. And if she doesn't sign, move it to formal hearing.
Very good. I'm happy to make that motion.
Second.
Yeah.
So how long?
How many days?
Until signed by, you know,
by next Thursday. Friday is a holiday.
Friday is a holiday. Oh yes, I get it. So yeah, by end of business Thursday, which would be the
11/9. Or go to formal hearing.
Yeah.
Second.
Any further discussion? I would just add that if there's any other questions, you know, with regard to timing, the board staff will be available to answer them. But I think we've answered the bulk of the questions today and would not expect that there should be any further delays around this. As I've mentioned, the board is not unreasonable and understands the nuance involved in the timing of this. And the order is fairly clear as to our respect. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstaining? Motion carries. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Dr. Eberhardt. Thank you, Ms. Wellman.
Thank you.
Moving on to number, you know, we're not going to make it to 12:30, so I'm not going to bother with a code word anymore, Ms. Poe, or Kathy, whoever. I think it's Ms. Malice. But I do want to know what they all were at the end of the meeting, so we'll hold your fire. Let's move to number 15, discussion, consideration, possible action considering SIPAC e-passport eligibility requirements questionnaire that came into us for completion. And so Ms. Pack, and then we provide a brief summary. We'll kind of, after your summary, we'll answer any questions there may be there. And then hopefully we'll entertain a motion to give you direction.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Anytime that ASPPB or SIPACT pose a question to jurisdictions relative to, you know, what is your position on something, it is always going to be my practice to bring those questions to the board and not make any assumptions or any representations on behalf of the board without the board having had, you know, this opportunity to discuss, you know, adopt a motion and so forth. So this is one of those instances where SIPACT is really asking a fairly straightforward and simple question, which is, would Arizona find acceptable that any psychologist who possesses the certificate of professional qualification or CPQ, if by holding that certification, can they be deemed as having met the educational requirements to be granted an e-passport? The e-passport can then be used to seek an authorization through SciPac to practice either through telehealth or for the temporary authorization to practice in another participating jurisdiction. There's a lot of information that has been supplied relative to what is the CPQ. I supplied that even though this board, of course, accepts and recognizes the CPQ as acceptable for purposes of deeming an applicant as having met the educational requirements for licensure in Arizona. So even though these things are quite congruent, and I think I know how the board would want our answer to be registered, I still bring this to you for purposes of you giving me direction on how to respond to the survey question. And I can answer questions, or I know Dr. Malott is truly a subject matter expert. Dr. Medina is as well on this certification. So they may have some thoughts to start with.
Well, do we mean to call on one of the subject matter experts? Are they going to volunteer to provide any further information on this matter?
Well, I was hoping for the more senior subject expert to chime in, but that's okay. I will share my thoughts. I mean, I do agree. I think that, having the CPQ sort of would meet that requirement for education, certainly in our state. So I would be in agreement of that proposal.
And I think is the second one also new, Harry?
I'm sorry, Dr. Ma, I didn't hear your entire question.
No. So the psychologist who's been continuously licensed for 20 years.
Oh, yes, that's right. There is another question.
Okay. So I'm fine with both of them. I think,
Yes, the question posed in number three, again, congruent with, how we deem CPQ holders eligible for licensure in Arizona. So, yes, that related question, I think, is it's important to acknowledge, but I think it's in the same spirit as the question that I was focused on.
Yeah, so CPQ as well as the 20 years, which is actually right in line with our board, be pretty much.
So what I'm hearing is the board probably wants to adopt a motion directing me to answer yes to both of the survey questions.
Yes.
Okay. So moved.
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstaining? All right. Hearing none, motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much, Ms. Packinen. Do you want to continue with number 16? I know you want to take a moment, or are you good to go?
I'm good to go. Thank you.
Discussion. I'll give you the introduction. Discussion, consideration, possible action, proposed legislation in the 2024 56th Arizona State Legislature second regular session. We've got three bills: the psychologist prescribing authority bill update, we've got the behavior analyst bill update, and then we've got a second attempt at HB 2046, better known as the Board of Psychology Examiners update. So, Ms. Patrick, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the as promised, A and B will be brief, and I think we'll just spend a little bit of time talking through item C. With respect to A, the psychologist prescribing authority bill update, the ASPA leadership, including the president, Dr. Manson, who has made some routine appearances in front of the board. We agreed there really wasn't much to update, except from my perspective. What I can tell the board is that the executive directors of the three regulatory boards who would be involved in the implementation of this requirement, to different degrees and in different capacities, we've started to have some conversations around, coordination and those discussions, how we would administer and implement the provisions of this legislation should it be adopted. So this is all very new and preliminary. Of course, I raised the issue about the appropriateness of this board being charged with collecting the fees, and then how do those fees be used to support the medical boards, the two medical boards' investigative costs. So we have some ideas that we're going to work through, but those meetings and discussions will really begin in earnest next week. And so I'll have a more comprehensive update at some point. What I have asked Dr. Manson is, sort of let the boards figure out the administrative piece without, a whole lot of, we don't need the oversight and we don't want the legislation to create problems that we know we can resolve, in the administrative realm, if that makes sense. So I'll have more information on how, we're going to coordinate our various responsibilities to ensure that there is a seamless effort to protect the public. Any questions about that before I move on? Okay, thank you. So with respect to the Behavior Analysts Board Bill update, there really are no updates. Really what we're waiting for, I think, is the next opportunity, probably December 8th, for the group to come back with, maybe a final bill or, some sort of outline for how they expect their strategy to, what they expect their strategy to look like as they, try to shepherd the bill through the process. But nothing to share with the board at this time.
Wouldn't it be fair, Ms. Pekkanen, that this, we did learn in the committee that the Sunrise application was submitted?
Yes, it was. It was submitted ahead of the November 1st deadline. So in the final days of October, I believe we both heard Dr. Davey that there will not be a Sunrise application hearing, that the group felt that filing the application was sort of a due diligence piece that they needed to execute, but they don't anticipate that there will be a hearing to review the application. Of course, if that were to change, I would be present as a resource and I would notify the board of the hearing date and time. So, and that would be done by the Health Committee of Reference, which would be comprised of members of the Health and Human Services Committee in both the House of Representatives and the Arizona Senate. So until December 8th, I will just, wait to see if there are any incremental updates to share with the board. But I think the focus of today for this agenda item is to revisit our failed bill. I'm sorry to describe it in those terms, but it was House Bill 2046 from last year. And I have reminded the board in my memorandum how it came to be that, you know, while the bill did pass with a majority of members of the House supporting it, because it did not carry a majority vote of the majority party members of the House, the Senate determined it would not be heard. Representative Bliss, who sponsored this bill for us last year, she had indicated when we knew its fate, earlier this year, she had indicated she would like to make another attempt to support this, to sponsor this bill in 2024. And so we have had a few conversations back and forth about that to prepare for it. What she had suggested and I had affirmed was that I would be coming forward to the board with some recommendations to remove some of the more controversial provisions from this bill and distill it down to what I believe are the most important and impactful provisions. There are a couple of proposed changes that I think we didn't anticipate would cause consternation and lose us some votes, lose us some support. So I'd like to go over those and see what the board's thoughts are relative to removing them and moving forward with just the provisions that are most important. What I think we learned was that going to page, let's say 6 of your PDF file, please. It's page 4 of the bill. We had been asked, I believe it was, I'm going to describe this as probably an ASPA association sponsored request, at least to some degree. There was some conversations on the ASPA listserv about how this statute language about what are the instances of unprofessional conduct, which is failing to make available to a client or patient or to the designated representative a copy of the client or patient's record, excluding, well, our language says including, we were proposing to say excluding raw test data. What that represented was an attempt on our part to bring this language in closer alignment with the language in the APA Code of Ethics. The conversation that ASPA's listserv captured was, it could be construed that these two sets of language are in direct conflict with each other, contradict each other. I will say that the board did hear Ms. Galvin weigh in relative to, you know, there is, she can argue that there's an interpretation of this provision that actually is consistent with the APA Code of Ethics. We were just simply trying to make, I think, a very clear distinction by changing including to excluding to make it blatantly obvious that our language in the statute aligned with that of the APA Code of Ethics. What happened was that a former nurse licensee whose license had been revoked by the nursing board more than a decade ago. I can't recall all the facts and circumstances, but she testified against our bill in such a way that I think caused a lot of confusion about what we were trying to do, what this language means, what this language enables psychologists to do, which is issue fitness for duty evaluations that can culminate in someone losing their license. The whole thing sort of got with the confusion and misconstruing the language and so forth. I think we shed some votes and some support, even though I tried, you know, to bring the conversation back to clarity I'm not sure how successful I was in the end. So to me, this is just a distraction and confusion that's unnecessary and will potentially deflect away from the attention that this bill deserves. So I'm recommending we just drop it and leave it. If we're ever as a board, if we ever have to look at this issue, we fall back to Ms. Galvin's advice relative to how to interpret this language in such a way that it is consistent with the APA Code of Ethics. Did I manage to confuse everybody with that? Yeah. Okay.
Thank you. A quick question, I guess, and I don't know why it's just because it's scratched out, scratched in. So are we proposing to have it say including or excluding? We're proposing to leave it as including, right?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. We'll leave it as including and pretend we never asked for it to be replaced with excluding.
That's what I thought. I just want to make sure. Okay.
Yes. And I will have the conversation with ASPA if they want to, pick up the flag and run it up the hill. They are more than welcome to take this on and everything that comes with it. But I think that this is something that we just sort of need to make extricate and make a graceful exit away from. Okay. So then the other provision, I will scroll ahead and invite you to do the same to page 15 of your PDF, so page 13 of the bill. So all we were trying to do here is sort of acknowledge that the Canadian Psychological Association at its accreditation program for psychology education programs, to recognize that accreditation as congruent to the accreditation of the American Psychological Association, knowing that in doing so, we would, remove a barrier or a hurdle, lower a hurdle, if you will, for anyone who completed their education in a Canadian accredited program and sort of, put them on a faster track to licensure here. There are obviously Canadian residents who spend time in Arizona. We do receive not a lot, but some inquiries from Canadian educated psychologists who are sort of trying to navigate, our qualifications for licensure. What ensued from this conversation on one extreme was we had members of the House who were asking, well, why wouldn't you also recognize the Guatemalan Psychological Association and the Peruvian Psychological Association? And, that was a question where, I couldn't even begin to tell you, where those, if they even exist, where they are in terms of equivalency to the American Psychological Association. So it opened up a Pandora's box that I think was difficult to close. And then we, on the other extreme, we had members saying, we really should be generating psychologists who are homegrown. And so I didn't know how to respond to that comment. So I think it's a distraction. And I think it's just, let's remove it. The juice isn't worth the squeeze because we simply don't see all that many inquiries to sort of, make this a big deal. And any questions about that?
Yeah, and because we allow for non-APA programs, they would just come on, they have to do one extra form, the coursework form, that's it. And we would review the application like any other applicant and license them in almost the same amount of time. So
yes. Thank you for that, Dr. Malott. So does anyone else, there are a lot of other provisions in here, revisions, that are really technical changes does the board want me to go through again any of the other pieces of this bill that we want to retain? Or do you recall, is it clear enough what we are proposing? Do you recall from last year what we are proposing? I would just represent as, you know, this as, if the board agrees, let's not move forward with those pieces that I'm recommending we just drop. This bill truly becomes about, lowering those hurdles, the most important of which I think we've talked quite a bit around, is when the ECCC becomes, a test, an examination that tests really two domains, knowledge and skills, to afford and allow candidates to take part one, the knowledge piece, close to the time they've completed their education requirements, which is to their advantage. To me, that is what really is most important, what we need to lean in on to sell this bill. And so it would be in place well in time for January 1 of 2026.
I have one question, Ms. Patanen.
Yes.
So on page 16, I think, 14 of the bill, I just wanted to make sure we're clear. I'm clear on that. If C, the knowledge portion of the examination administered for or by the board after the applicant has completed the education requirements of this article. Help me understand what this article means.
Article 19.1 is the totality of all the board statutes. So it refers to all of the board, all of the statutes underneath the Board of Psychologist Examiners. So Title 32, Chapter 19.1, everything beginning with 32.2061 through.
But it says, sorry. I need to know what the education requirements of this article are. Could you point me to the right section?
Oh, I see what you're asking.
Yeah.
I think so. That is a change to 32.2072. It either cites back to a provision in, I can't remember if it's 2071.01 or 2071.
Where are you reading, Heidi?
So Dr. Malott is asking about the language on page, it's 16 of the PDF, 14 of the bill.
You're talking about 2071.4?
So Dr. Malott asked about what does the change at 32.2072 subsection C, where it states in the blue text, which do not include the dissertation or experience requirements prescribed in this article. So then that compels us to jump back to, you said Dr. Malott, 2071. I'm sorry, what did you say?
Four. That would be page 8. Would it mean that? That I just want to clarify.
2071A.
4. And you have A, B, C, D, E, F.
I think it is everything under A.
Well, education requirements.
So A2, A3, A4, A5.
Well, it cannot be A. It cannot be A because there you have to have a doctoral degree. You see what I mean? They don't have the degree. So it cannot be everything under A. The university needs to be accredited. Okay. It has to be labeled. It has to have faculty, has to have a core program. But A in itself is not acceptable because they don't have the degree. So I want to be careful,
Right.
And then leads to a doctoral degree. So I'm wondering whether it needs to be really specific and say a 1 through 4 or something, you know, to be clear, because you know, that 3 full-time degree years, okay, it doesn't say they've had to finish those years. 6 doesn't apply, but you made the exception there. 7 is just transcripts.
Really, we're talking 2 through 5. The construct of this statute is really confusing and strange to me. I totally follow what you're saying, Dr. Malat. And I remember having this conversation with Ledge Council, with the drafter of the bill. We were struggling to try to figure out how to, where to tie that back to, you know, relative to, you know, what are the education requirements. And so what we landed on was that general language, you know, under this article to give the board the interpretation, you know, the latitude to interpret what are the education requirements. So I guess the question becomes, do you want latitude the way that it's written, or do you want specificity and do you want to be precise?
An applicant may take the knowledge portion after the applicant completes the education requirements of this article. So I think it should say, which do not include the dissertation experience requirements. So that's fine. And it also does not include, if you go back to A27A, something about the posting of the doctoral degree, you know, or prior to earning the degree or something. I think you have to be clear. I don't know.
Do you want to work with me, knowing what the board's intent is? Do you want to work with me to arrive at, you know, some language that we just want to ask Representative Bliss to authorize Ledge Council to, you know, she and I can work out, assuming that we'll have the same bill drafter, Michelle, you know, we can refine this a bit.
Yeah, that's all I was, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I get the intent,
but right.
I want somebody to interpret that they have to have the doctoral degree in hand.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we can get closer to where we want to be. I'm following your logic. So we do have Dr. Malat 2-ish weeks. Representative Bliss will be away, and she wants to meet with me when she returns, so we can get these details worked out well ahead of you know, when I get with her and present her what I'm describing as a more focused bill that eliminates the potential quicksand traps that we want to, I think, avoid next year.
Yes, Dr. Stewart, sorry.
Thank you. Yeah, I certainly agree with Heidi. Selena Bliss, Dr. Bliss, has been a strong supporter of public health here in Arizona. She's from Yavapai County here. I've known her for many years, and she's certainly a good ally to have.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and to Dr. Stewart, just to add to what he said, she did agree to sponsor, obviously not just our bill, but there were other health regulatory board bills that she sponsored last year. Many of them ran into the same issues that, you know, we did. But, you know, to her credit, she wants to try again. And apply what we all learned from the process. So, very grateful to have someone who understands regulatory boards, willing to work with us.
I
would appreciate a motion that reflects what you want me to move forward with when I meet with Representative Bliss.
So I'll go ahead and make the motion. I make the motion that we approve the changes changes to the bill that was previously presented by deleting those two sections regarding the Canadian Psychological Association and the language regarding what is included in the records request, and possibly tweak Section C, 32-2, to ensure its clarity.
Second. Got the motion. I'm going to give it to, it's a fair tie. I'll give it to Dr. Stewart. Yeah, I see you pointing at people. Any further discussion? Okay. Very good. Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstaining? Very good. Motion unanimously carries. Thank you, everyone, for your work on that item. Number 17, new agenda items for future meetings.
I was wondering if we could get an update on board members, vacant positions.
Mr. Chair, yes, Dr. Malat, I will request another update, and there may be one in the interim.
Very good. And then also an update on, it was originally a recommendation from Committee on Behavior Analysts, but then the full board then rolled a complaint to multiple state agencies, as well as multiple federal agencies with one of the complaints. And just if we have an update from any of those organizations, or if there's no update from those organizations, if we could just get an update on that, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And then, Ms. Beckman, we also have your review that got punted last time, correct? Is that going to show on the December 8th?
Mr. Chair, we do have it on the December 8th agenda, along with some other items that we were doubtful that we would get to today, or that just were very quorum challenged.
No problem. No problem. Thank you very much for that. All right. Anybody else agenda items? All right. Hearing none. Item 18, adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Yes, discussion. Ms. Mouse, what were the code words going to be?
Remainder, can you hear me? The remainder of the code words were going to be Diamondbacks, foul ball, and strike.
Okay. So you weren't going to rub it. You weren't going to rub anything too bad. All right. Fair enough.
No, I didn't have losers on there.
Okay. Well, you know what? We made it much further than anybody gives us credit for. All right. Very good. Then we will, with that, no further discussion, I assume. Well, maybe lots of discussion, but not for this meeting. And we will go ahead and all those in favor of adjournment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, any abstaining, hearing none, motion carries. This meeting is now adjourned. Thank you, everyone, for their preparedness. Thank you, board staff. Heidi, I hope you feel better. And talk to everybody soon.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Davey.